Welcome, everyone. We're about to begin Be'ez Hashem BPW, share number 114. This is Ba'ez Panim, share for women, share number 114. The concept of honoring your husband, giving him respect, is a game changer. It's a totally transformative behavior over time that can enhance a marriage in ways that you can't even imagine. The respect and the kavod to give a person that way. The eishes chayah la teres bala, the eishes chayah being the crown of her husband. The influence that can happen, the great heights that a husband could reach because of his wife and the respect that she displays towards him is mind-bogglingly amazing. And people who've seen this sees how they become different people. You know, when the man's home is a place that he runs to, looks forward to, not that he runs away from, that he feels that his home is a haven, where he's treated with respect, where despite his day filled with inconveniences and challenges and disappointments, and failed attempts and things that haunt him and being mocked in the outside world or criticized in the outside world and coming home to be enveloped in a relaxed atmosphere with respect and acknowledgement of the feelings and encouragement. Is there anything I can do to help with it? It's a Ari Miklat. It's a haven. It's an oasis. It's an anxiety calmer to hear your comforting voice. And of course, a normal person, a normal husband, will over time reciprocate. And that's the goal of giving these shiurim, these BPM shiurim, the Ba'ez Panim Men shiurim, is that they should learn to appreciate your efforts in this way and to reciprocate back. Or not only reciprocate back, to initially give you the honor that you deserve, so that you will reciprocate back. But with the exception of that exception that I always say of real, truly toxic people, that no matter what you do, it's just fruitless. And there's some exceptional exceptions pertaining to that. But most of humanity, most of people, even if they could have real flaws and frustrating flaws, the honor and respect day in and day out, will soften a husband's heart ultimately to recognize that my wife is amazing and I need to respect her more and I need to love her more and I need to show appreciation more. Most men will come to that awareness. But if it's always criticalness, the sharp tongue, which forces him to withdraw into his shell, and one has that urge to run away from home, dreading coming home, is the opposite of that. Instead, emulate the sun to send rays of brightness and warmth. The kavod is a fuel for the soul. It's not just a physical thing. It's a spiritual thing. You know, the body needs attention, eating, sleeping, and taking care of it. The soul is neglected. But praising the person, lifting them, kavod, honor, which comes from the neshama, being respectful to all. Overall, v'ahavta re'acha kamecha, of every Jew, we all come from Har Sinai. And you start small. And you start small and then you continue upward and higher and higher. You know, during a week of Shiva, a lot of praise is shown upon the newly deceased person. Person moves away from a city, resigns from his position. Suddenly everyone comes out of the woodwork to say how much he'll be missed. Had that person heard a fraction of those encouraging words about him, that sick man would have more than a will to live. The one who moved would have considered, no, maybe I should stay. The employee, if he would have heard words, encouragement from his or her employer, they may have put more effort in their work. Husband and wife may be different people, but they can influence each other to be the best version of themselves, not to be frugal with compliments, to acknowledge. You know, it says, "Kasha anshe shalavan yosim anshe shatcheles," which means that the white strings of the tzitzis are easy to come by. The tcheles, in those days when they had the blue strings, and now there's a minig with many that do it, but it's harder to achieve. So in those days, even when tcheles was prevalent to all of Klal Yisrael, you didn't get such a punishment if you neglected that, because it's harder to get. But what's easy, lavan was very cheap, and you don't do that, you're negligent. They're at strongest. So the same thing over here. It's so easy to say a please, a thank you, I'm sorry. And we'll be accountable more for not saying those things that are so easy to say, that kindness. It's never too late. It's never too late. The Shechina is Shaira in a place where you respect your husband and ultimately come to love the husband. A lot of disciplinary problems that you have with children, if you go deeper into it, you'll realize it's because the parents didn't treat each other with respect. So in summary of all this is to honor and respect, which is the fundamental of human existence. When you respect others, others will respect you. And a respected husband is an unwavering support for his wife and vice versa. So this is the idea. There needs to be an empathy, a deep-rooted respect. Comparisons also equal unhappiness. It's not respectful. Why aren't you such a big Talmud Chacham like my father? Why can't you earn as much money as my brother-in-law? Why don't you help more in the house like with your neighbor? Now, he gives different stories here. She really, I should say, I've been saying he, but it's a lady that's wrote this book, of two different wives, where one of them, the husband was hot-tempered and penny-pinching, and one wife decides to subconsciously have zero respect for him, even though she closes her mouth and outwardly acts loyal, but has this disdain in her heart, and he senses that it's disdainful, so he reacts in kind, while another wife pushes that away and decides to respect him regardless and sees her as good points. And the wife and the husband notices this, and he turns around and tries to become better. I think this example is a little too simplistic. And I always mention the other side of things. It's not so simple. There are exceptions to this rule. There needs to be boundaries sometimes, where if a negative behavior constantly occurs, there needs to be something to be worked through. Like in the previous shiur we gave, where someone smoked up a storm for years and years and years and only stopped because the wife didn't mention it, that could happen, but is that always the healthiest thing? Or you do mention it and just don't be a nag about it and don't overpush, but to mention it here and there in a smart, wise way may be worthwhile. You need hadracha with this. This oversimplification of constantly be quiet and swallow everything and even just accept everything is a nice ideal, and it is an ideal. But in a practical way, you really have to ask a shaila. The key really is though you can't push. You cannot twist arms. You cannot force change. But not to mention it at all, that not necessarily. This is one thing where I do disagree, and I'm sure many will others, on this absolute black and white premise. But the idea being, though, is what's definitely clear is you weigh it carefully. Even when you decide to say something, you weigh it carefully. It comes with a lot of kindness and love all around it when you decide finally to say something about it. And you do it in a respectful way. And in every other way, you treat that person, your husband, with respect. I'm going to now, this one personal story is that she writes at the end of this chapter. And this is something I'm just going to quote word for word. Listen very, very carefully. It's a painful story, but this happens all the time. Listen carefully. Dear married women, Today, I am 71 years old and all my children are married with children, Baruch Hashem. I married my husband when I was 19, but I only began a quality married life when I was 60. A tragedy. I'll tell you my story so that it'll never happen to you. My chassan was a prodigy, a scholar from the best yeshiva in Yerushalayim, lovingly handpicked by my father. As the oldest daughter in my family, my husband and I visited my parents often. With every visit, my husband filled the house with happiness and cheer. The whole family boasted about this wonderful addition to our family, except for me. See, a truly intelligent young wife would have glowed with pride and bliss, but not me. I was jealous. I was convinced that the honor afforded him was all on my account. Well, why were they only talking about him? Why all the fuss about his good traits and his exemplary manner? I was literally burning with resentment. The respect he showed me irked me even more. And my brothers chastised me on my unbecoming behavior. My parents reasoned with me. Your husband's kaved is your kaved too. You should be ecstatic when he's held in high esteem. But a fool remains foolish, and their words fell on deaf ears. My relationship with my husband gradually deteriorated. In order to boost my own self-worth, I offended him at every opportunity. Whatever he bought me was spurned, was rejected. Our bewildered neighbors listened to me rudely raise my voice at him. I thought I was in control. I thought I was better and smarter. I shamefully admit that I was not. Years passed. I was already an accomplished mother with a house full of children, but my inappropriate conduct didn't change. I insisted that my husband stay in the kitchen to feed the children, even though it wasn't necessary. I demanded that he perform a variety of degrading chores just to put him down. Yet, as an excellent, compassionate, and affectionate young man, my husband abided by all my wishes. He catered to my whims and my caprices with dignity and concern. Naturally, my husband needed space away from the oppressive environment I created. Most of his waking hours were spent in the Beis Medrash, where he took solace and comfort in Torah study. When he arrived home in the evening, I assailed him with a barrage of insults. Swallowing his pride and his anguish, my husband remained quiet in the face of my endless onslaught. As the children matured, even they began to question my behavior. "Mommy, why did you treat Tati so badly?" Even strangers looked up to him. "Why do you hate him so much?" Eventually, my children married, leaving the dismal home of their youth. At least they were happy. As for me, I was still consumed with childish envy. Now, maybe it was an ambulance siren that woke me up. My husband suffered a major heart attack. He was transported to the emergency room by Hatzalah volunteers. The physician unequivocally explained that the heart attack was brought on by a deep pain that had affected his heart. No one had to elaborate. I caused that pain. Standing next to his hospital bed, I couldn't muster the courage to address this man whose life I practically snuffed out single-handedly. I watched other women in the ward softly encouraging their sick husbands, infusing them with courage and hope. When I returned home, I almost drowned in a valley of tears. My eyes were red, my face was swollen. I was embarrassed to walk in the street, embarrassed to face the man I married. When I returned to the hospital the following morning, my anxiety and regret were obvious. Forever the gentleman, my husband, turned to me and said, "Let bygones be bygones. We have to salvage what we can, at least to impress upon the children how to conduct a healthy relationship. Who knows how much longer I have?" After that exchange, I implored heaven to save my husband's health and to save our marriage, and I vowed to dedicate my life to him if only he would survive. I cried to Hashem and begged for another chance. The day my husband came home from the hospital, I began life anew. I prepared a house for his homecoming with an unfamiliar feeling of joy. The kids were now to greet him too. They were dumbfounded, for I now spoke to my husband with unprecedented deference and respect. I informed them of my new resolution, thereby admitting the grave error of my previous life. I implored them to respect each other, for the subsequent remorse is not worth the price. 10 years have elapsed since the heart attack. My life will never be the same, and just because my husband is unwell. And not just because my husband is unwell. Attending to his needs is a labor of love. My whole mindset is different, for I'm no longer preoccupied with my own self-worth. I would reveal my identity but for the reputation of my children and their families. Nevertheless, I feel a duty to share my joy, to share my story, to show other young women the sad ending of the envious. If my words would impress and make a difference in the life of just one woman, it would be my consolation and an atonement for my sin. Young ladies, Take a look at yourselves. Don't let what happened to me happen to you. Base your marriage on flexibility, on modesty, on generosity. Don't wait decades until the unpleasant misery enlightens you. By then, it may already be too late. Bracha v'atzlacha.